happened over the past 10 or so years is that the rules of how you act fairly in any disciplinary process have been codified in increasing amounts of detail through large amounts of court decisions. And the court decisions are happening in a lot of different areas. So as well as sport, they're also happening in arbitration and other forms of dispute resolution. And so there are a lot of detailed rules that disciplinary bodies need to be able to understand and apply. And the difficulty for disciplinary bodies is that a lot of them are very well established and have for many years been working perfectly functionally, but they're not managing to keep up with that body of rules. And that's why it's so important that disciplinary bodies adopt a structure which gives them protection against this detailed body of rules that's building up in the courts.
Yeah, I was just going to say, just to continue from Richard's point, in terms of a specific sporting process and sporting governing bodies and the kind of pressure that they come under, as well as the courts, obviously, there is pressure from the public. I think, you know, that sport is a public event. Everyone's interested in it. Everybody has an opinion. And I think that adds a different pressure to sports governing bodies' processes as opposed to other non-sporting bodies' processes. You know, everybody wants to make sure that a team or a player has been sanctioned properly and that, you know, it's fair and a level playing field. And I think that definitely adds its own level of pressure that's unique to sports governing bodies.
And it's maybe worth clarifying that the issue's really split into two different headings. One of them is power, and the other is fairness. So the courts will never really interfere with the substantive decision, a decision that the sporting decision itself. Where the courts will interfere with is if a tribunal goes out with the powers that it has, and that's where it's open to challenge, which is really a subset of powers. If it acts in a way which is unfair, and by acting unfairly, it takes itself out with the underlying power that it has. So what the court's interested in is where disciplinary bodies are acting outside the powers that they've been given. It's all disciplinary committees are ultimately a creature of the contract that sets them up. So any sporting body there's a contractual agreement that it will have its certain powers, and it's when it steps out with those powers that it comes into trouble.
One thing that we have noticed in our part of the world is that sports governing bodies are generally more reluctant to adopt, say, principles of natural justice.
I think probably historically that was the case, and you know, sporting bodies were very much closed shops, and they made decisions that nobody really understood, and they just kind of issued them. But I think, you know, as sport grows and it becomes more of a global business, and I'm thinking, you know, specifically about football here, those kinds of decisions don't really pass the test anymore, and there's enough money for players and clubs to challenge the decisions if they don't think that principles of natural justice have been adhered to. So I think it's, you know, whereas maybe 20 years ago sports bodies might have got away with making certain decisions in certain ways, I don't think that happens anymore, or shouldn't happen anymore, and certainly it's possible to be challenged much more frequently than it was in the past.
Which again comes back to the court's ultimate control. So certainly in Scotland and in England and Wales, and in this part of the world, it's of course a body can act in a more sort of care, which maybe doesn't meet the rules of natural justice, but if it doesn't, it risks a challenge, and the courts will always be prepared to listen to a challenge if a tribunal hasn't acted according to the rules of natural justice.
Over the last several years, how have you seen increased fairness in disciplinary procedures?
As I was saying just now, the rules of fairness have, over the past 10 years, been increasingly codified. So there's a lot of detail in cases as to what fairness means. But
going to hear that because we have a set of rules which you didn't follow, you didn't put the information in on time, and therefore we're entitled to proceed without looking at that new information that you put in at the last minute. So by having a structure, that's what gives the tribunals the protection to be able to say it's acted fairly, it's given people an opportunity to be heard, and it's done it in a structured way.
People always point out the fact that certainty is one of the most vital components of any functioning legal system.
Yes. I think that's definitely the case. Certainty is what everybody wants. You know, I think one of the biggest problems is somebody can go into a tribunal and not know what ultimately is going to happen to them. That's always going to be open to challenge. So in sport, as in other spheres, certainty is definitely important. And in fact, a body of rules we see as a means of controlling tribunals, because a sporting body very often appoints a large group of people to act as its tribunal members. And it's in the interest of the sport body to make sure those tribunals all act in a consistent way for just the reasons that you were talking about. So a body of rules provides that certainty and consistency by having some control over the way in which different tribunals, different sets of people coming together in different cases will come to much the same decision. It's maybe worth also saying that we have felt it's important that a body of rules incorporates a clear set of disciplinary rules. So whereas in the past, the underlying rules, the things that if you do wrong will lead to a sanction, have sometimes been very general. We have tended to list in detail what the rules are what the disciplinary rules are, and also the sanctions that will be imposed if you fall foul of those rules.
How has conflict of interest been dealt with in your area of work?
You're right in terms of when there's a sporting organisation, the person who is prosecuting the rules is very often an employee of the organisation, and that is just, you know, as a matter of fact, that's what happens. It's different, obviously, in the court system that has separation of functions. But I think what is important, that even if the sports prosecutor is an employee of the governing body, he or she still has to be given independence and allowed to make their own decision about whether or not a prosecution is justified or not. And that has to be the case, you know, without interference of people that are involved in the governance of the sport and people that are involved in the decision making of the potential breaches of the rules.
So if you are an employee of the organization and you are the prosecutor as well, what steps can you take to demonstrate independence?
The answer is that it is increasingly important to make sure that there's a separation between prosecution and tribunal. And I think there are a lot of disciplinary processes that exist at the moment that don't have that separation. But not having that separation is potentially giving rise to a challenge. So it's important to separate the two. So it's essential to set up a separate body that prosecutes cases, and then a body of independent tribunals. Now, the relaxation to that is we've acted in a case, for instance, called Fotheringham in the Scottish courts, where the Scottish courts have recognised that a sporting body is a relatively small body, and that there has to be some scope for relaxation of the rules. But ultimately, it's still important that the separation of the functions, and again, it comes down to the way the disciplinary bodies are structured.
Yeah, I mean, one sort of indicator of whether or not there is independence between the prosecution and the judicial function is to look at the percentage of how many breaches are actually found to be, line of breaches are actually found to have been breached. Because if that figure is close to, you know, say 100%, then there's obviously an element that they're only pushing through the cases that are likely to be found guilty, or there is an element that the judicial function
be cases that alleged breaches of the rules are actually not found, and the party is not guilty of the rules.
All right, Neeraj Thomas and Richard Farndale, thank you for speaking with us.